Thanks for listening to Schlereth and Evans On Demand. Did you know you can listen to us on Alexa? Enable our skill today, then say, Alexa, play 104.3 The Fan.
Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan presents Schlereth and Evans.
All right, here we are. We're back together. After a couple days apart, good to see you, Mark Schlereth. How are things?
Things are great. I mean, I'm telling you what, timing in life is everything. Top dressed my yard over the weekend. I knew the rain was coming, so I had to get it done. 8 hours of just grueling yard work. I got gym muscles. Landscaping muscles not quite developed right now. Back's
a little tender. Yeah,
back's a little tender.
Absolutely.
But you know what? I pulled out of the driveway this morning, Mike, and I back, you know, to my left a little bit. So I just, you know, just turn the car a little bit, and the lights shine on the glistening grass
that's
covered in topsoil.
Yes.
And I'm like, look at you, you little shaver. I'm like,
you whisper sweet nothings
to it. So, yeah, just drinking it in.
Just
drinking it in. Oh, gosh.
Well,
just great.
Drink it in. The NFL draft is coming up on Thursday. So much intrigue. I will give the Broncos and John Elway a lot of credit because there's been enough,
I love this word,
subterfuge, I think,
created
around here the last couple weeks that I honestly can tell you right now, I don't have a real strong sense of what they're going to do.
Yeah.
Do you?
No, I don't. You know, it's great. And I will give them, if you're grading the pre-draft process, right? The like juxtapose the Arizona Cardinals pre-draft process versus the Denver Broncos pre-draft process. Only 9 picks separate the two. No, really, don't. We're not going to take Kyler Murray. No, really. We're not decided yet. Nothing to see here. Move along. I mean, it's just like, it's comical, right? It's absolutely comical. Now, the only thing and the only theory that I saw that might possibly make sense is trading back a couple of spots with somebody that is desperate for one of the defensive players. So you still get your guy, Kyler Murray, but instead of at 1 overall, maybe you get him at 2 or 3. Kind of like what San Francisco did with, if you remember a couple of years ago with the Mitchell Trubisky trade, where they traded down from 2 to 3. They still got the defensive player they want, although he hasn't done much, Solomon Thomas. And Chicago jumped up to get Trubisky at 2. Something of that nature. So they move down 1 or they move down 2 where you know San Francisco's loaded at the quarterback position, so they're taking a defensive player. The Jets have their quarterback, so they're taking a defensive player. They just have to stay above the Raiders because we don't know what the Raiders are doing. But if you're going, hey, you know, subterfuge meter between like kind of where they are right now and who's doing what, the Arizona Cardinals would have an F. And the Broncos would literally have an A because you ask 10 different draft analysts and you'll get 10 different picks there. We've got Bucky Brooks coming on. He'll come on Wednesday for the NFL Network, does some stuff here at Fox as well, but does a great job breaking things down. We'll have to talk to him about kind of where they're going. But I'm telling you what, Mike, I think I'd have to give the Broncos and John Elway a very, you know, very high grade on keeping us all kind of in the dark.
When it comes to what they're going to do on Thursday, is it as simple as this? Does everything revolve around how long they think Joe Flacco can be the guy? Because if we are to take them on their word, what they've said about Joe Flacco, how they believe he is just entering his prime. Mm. He's in his prime. There's a lot of football left ahead of him, that this is not just simply a one-year thing, then there's no way they draft a quarterback at number 10. But that hasn't stopped plenty of people from believing they will indeed draft a quarterback at number 10 that they do not believe that Joe Flacco is indeed the long-term guy.
So yeah, you use the old adage, if their lips are moving, they're lying at this time of the year. So, you know, I mean, just the fact that they have come out so adamantly and then done exactly the opposite of that when it comes to the pre-draft process, meaning they've brought every quarterback in. I mean, they've done every one of them. So it just makes you feel like, well, they're not really telling the truth about what they said. Even though, and again, to me, they're drumming up business. I said this weeks ago, and I'll adhere to it. Man, I think they're going to have a. I think there's going to be a move, you know, where they trade down out of this pick. I took the Giants at 17 as the one that I think comes up and gets it. But anyway, we'll see exactly how they play that out. But I'm with you. They don't. They just flat. They have not tipped their cap to what they are doing draft wise.
We wait till tomorrow night for Game 5, pivotal Game 5. Always pivotal in a 2-2 series, best of 7 for the Nuggets and the Spurs. But what? It gives us an extra day to bask in what they were able to pull off on Saturday, ending the curse, ending the long drought, winning in San Antonio, and doing so in impressive fashion. So what was the turning point? You look back on it. What was the turning point for the Nuggets in Game 4?
You know what? I'm not sure what the turning point was.
Can I tell you what I think it was?
Yeah.
I think it was obvious. I think it was the interview that Michael Malone did right after the first quarter, in which he said, we got to play defense. And mm-hmm. this was coming right off the heels of Game 3, in which he was ripped his team for being soft and
right.
almost being in awe of the Spurs and letting Derek White do whatever he wants. And it was almost like just that the team decided to draw that line in the proverbial line in the sand after that first quarter in which they gave up 34 points and they said enough, enough. And what they did defensively over the next three quarters, allowing 20, 25, and 24 points was one of those performances where it was like they figured out, okay, this is who we are. This is what we want. This is what we're capable of. And I think they just absolutely smashed the mystique of the Spurs and Greg Popovich straight in the face.
Well, you would hope that would be the case. I said this after their win here in Denver, where they came back in the fourth quarter, and it was really, you know, the fourth quarter explosion and how they ran away from the Spurs was really, we had Earl Boykins on, but, you know, there was a poke away by Murray that created an extra possession. There was a front by the Joker. He was fronting Aldridge, and then just about before the entry pass, he spun off of Aldridge and got behind him and intercepted the entry pass. It was just a brilliant defensive move, extra possession. And I had talked about if you're going to beat the Spurs, you got to start with defensive mastery. If you play hard on the defensive court, it will lead to offensive possessions, extra possessions, and it will lead to points. You just can't be, hey, we got to knock down more shots. No, we got to play better defense. And they did that in a blowout. You know, when I was sitting there watching it, I just was completely, like, my math, this is not going to surprise you, my math was completely off because I was like, oh, you can't slow down, you can't. And then I started realizing, oh, shoot, you guys are, this is a blowout. And good for them. They've got to come and continue that defensive kind of, just that strong defensive presence to lead to that offense. So they got to put another win up here. They got to go up 3-2 because I'm not sure that they've bashed the mystique of Popovich. How does Popovich, what's his next kind of quote-unquote move? How does he counteract what the Nuggets were able to do?
All right, what is the Spurs answer? And if it's okay with Vaughn, should it be okay with Bronco fans? That's next.
This is Steve.
Hi.
Steve loves manila folders.
It's true.
That's why he started a company supplying manila folders to large corporations.
In both white and eggshell.
What Steve doesn't love is spending time paying suppliers and browsing for loans. Luckily, First Bank offers time-saving treasury management tools and business loans, so you can spend more time with your passion, even if it's manila folders.
In both white and eggshell.
Okay, Steve. First Bank. Business banking for good. Member FDIC. Go to eFirstBank.com/business for more details.
It's Schlereth and Evans on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
You know, I spent some time with him. He's a pretty cool dude, man. I like him a lot. You know, if he's there, you know, whenever we pick, you know, my pick is to pick him. But like I said, you know, I'm not running the show. So whoever we get, I'm okay with. I just want to get the best available. And if we do that, I'm good with that.
So Von Miller endorsing the idea of taking Dwayne Haskins at number 10 if he's available. Peter King, reputable Peter King, Mark, came out and said he would not be surprised if the Broncos took Dwayne Haskins if they had a chance. So what do you make of all this? Are you on board with the idea of if available, if he slides past the Giants at number 6, take him at 10?
I think, listen, there are And I've talked to a lot of people about this, Mike, and I'm no draft expert. I'm not claiming to be a draft expert. I haven't spent hours grinding through the tape on every possible, you know, prospect, and I don't know the third rounders and the fourth rounders, and frankly, I don't care, all right? But I know enough to know this. There are probably 15 guys that you would rank as top-tier game changer, guy come in and potentially start for you type of players in this draft, and none of them play the quarterback position. So if you're a football team like the Denver Broncos or a football team that is third in your division, chasing the Chiefs, chasing the Chargers, and frankly, you know, have the Raiders breathing down your neck with some of the moves that they've made, and you think you're in a position to draft a quarterback and groom him for 2 years? Guy that's only played one season of college football? With the history of Paxton Lynch? You know, the shadow that that's casting on your organization just a few years, you know, just from a few years ago? Heck, he was here in camp last year. You still, and you try to give him the job again. So, do I think Dwayne Haskins is a hell of a lot more talent? Yeah, okay, I think Dwayne Haskins is a better quarterback, yes. But do I think that's the direction they're going to go in when there are multiple players at that position, or multiple players at the 10th overall position that are difference makers that can come in and be a starter and maybe a Pro Bowl type of player for you, that you're going to take a developmental quarterback? I just can't imagine that. If you looked at this draft and you said, where do these quarterbacks fit in just the overall grade of players? You know, you wouldn't hit a quarterback until you were in, maybe you wouldn't rank a quarterback. Maybe Kyler Murray would be the highest ranked guy, and he might be in your 30s or 40s when it just comes to best player. If you're just going on best player available, obviously the quarterback position is, you know, people get Twitter pated over it, and people, oh, they get their, you know, panties all ruffled about it. And if we don't get one in the first round, then you're just never going to succeed. I mean, it's that to me it's silly.
What do you make, though, of Vaughn saying that, though? I mean, you would think that Vaughn is all about now, is all about trying to win now, and would probably love to see them go out and get a defensive player, not a developmental quarterback. I mean, Vaughn's seen his share of developmental quarterbacks roll through here. You'd think that's the last thing he'd want right now.
So you could have asked Vaughn about Nick Bosa. You could have asked him about any. You could have asked him Juwan James. You could have asked him about anyone. And you know what? He'd have given you the same standard core answer. If you think, have you followed Vaughn on Instagram? If you think Vaughn is breaking down film of Dwayne Haskins going, yeah, that's who we need, then you're delusional.
Yeah, but if you
Vaughn is going to, hey, listen, man, Vaughn is going to, and I'm sure he's probably over at the facility where they're having some type of mandatory or voluntary mandatory fake, veteran mini camp, and maybe bumped in the kid. Vaughn is going to speak glowingly about everybody that he bumps into. That's who Vaughn is. You know, frankly, that comment right there is probably why Vaughn's never developed into the leader that you want to have on your football team. You want him as a player on your football team.
What should he have said then?
Well, no, I'm just saying that Vaughn is going to, hey, Vaughn loves everybody. It's great. You're great. We're great. Everybody's great. It's going to be great. I'm the most optimistic guy in the world. It's going to be great. We're going to win a lot of games. We're going to win a championship. I mean, that's Vaughn. Meanwhile, in Philadelphia, you got Lane Johnson, their starting right tackle, is one of the best players in football. Basically going after Donovan McNabb, one of the guys. This is why nobody likes you in this locker room. Going after Donovan McNabb because he criticized the current quarterback situation. And all Donovan McNabb said is, hey, man, like, he's got to stay healthy in the next 2 years. Otherwise, you might have to move on. And here comes, you know, Lane Johnson going after 11-year starter in the program of Donovan McNabb. I mean, I'm just saying Vaughn is that, like, you. Everybody keeps trying to make Vaughn that vocal, that leader. Vaughn's going to lead by, hey, man, I'm going to make great plays. I'm going to sack the quarterback, and and I'm going to love on everybody, and I've always got a smile on my face. That's his job. He's not DeMarcus Ware. He's just not. And don't ask him to be, because he can't be that.
As we look forward to tomorrow night, Nuggets hosting the Spurs, Game 5. You said, when we talked about this a few minutes ago, you said, I'm not so sure the Nuggets have, you know, destroyed or put a huge dent into the mystique of Greg Popovich and the Spurs. And that seems to be the general consensus. Oh, well, you know, Popovich will have an answer. Why not just look at it this way? You know, why not look at it that this Nuggets team, which is the better team, and they yes. proved that over the course of the long regular season. They proved they were the better team. What about them just having their breakthrough moment? What about them, this young basketball team, all of a sudden figuring out, okay, this is what we're capable of. And if we can do this, if we can completely take control of that game and bring it on home for the final three quarters in a place that's been a house of demons for us.
Right. When was the last time they won there before that? It was it's crazy. It was like 7 years
since
they had won there.
So why instead of it being, oh, what does Popovich have in store for the Nuggets? Why can't it just be, hey, this team had their aha moment.
Right.
And okay, now they're prepared to go on and build on
okay.
that.
When they tied the series up at one, shouldn't that have been their aha moment? When they played great defense in the fourth quarter, they came back from 19 down at one point to win that game and to score a bunch of buckets in the fourth quarter and to play great defense, which led to great opportunities on the offensive side. Shouldn't that have been their aha moment? And then they went to San Antonio and just got their butts whipped.
Yeah, but I do think that the challenge of trying to play on the road in the playoffs. I mean, San Antonio, as bad as Antonio was on the road this year, they were very good at home. And there may have been some of that mystique right. was still in their okay. minds. And that was on display through Game 3 and the first quarter of Game 4.
Okay, this
and,
is what
and
I,
then they
this,
said, enough's enough.
This is what I know. Mike Malone ripped the Nuggets Game 3 for not showing up in San Antonio, correct?
Mm-hmm.
You think Greg Popovich is going to be like, hey, it's all right, boys. You know, we just got absolutely thunder punched right in the throat, but it's good. We're fine.
I just think the longer a series goes, the less dude, you can play that,
103-117. Yeah, I just think that they are going to have some pride, and they're going to play. They're going to come here and they're going to play. Oh, I think the Nuggets are better.
I agree with that. Yeah. I just think at this point, the deeper you get into a series, all that psychological mumbo-jumbo right, goes out the window and becomes who's the better team.
Right. All I'm saying is you're a young basketball team. Don't all of a sudden think you've arrived. You know, you thought you arrived at the end of the season when you were resting players and you went 5-6 down the stretch and you came out sputtering in the playoffs. Just don't think you've arrived. I think you can have confidence. I think you can be like, man, we really put it on them. Now let's just keep the hammer down. That's great. But don't all of a sudden rest on a blowout.
Here comes the morning brew. Does John Elway have the formula figured out? And how did the Avs douse the flames so easily? See what I just did there? That's coming up next.
Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan presents Schlereth and Evans.
Good morning.
Morning.
It's time for your morning brew.
Things are going to get weird.
You're going to eat lightning, and you're going to crap thunder.
Okay, this guy needs coffee and coolers. Stat.
Know what can really help you sort through these important issues?
What?
Orange mocha frappuccino!
Damn, Jimmy. This some serious gourmet.
Let's get it on.
I think our guys understood how we needed to play, and they answered the call. They went out there and were much more physical, and we were able to pull out the win.
You know, a great, great moment on Saturday for Michael Malone, you know, because this whole series has been framed that it's a David versus Goliath type matchup in the coaching position. And all we've seen is Michael Malone go about his business this year in a way that I believe he should be the coach of the year. He's been very impressive. And the way that his team, well, first of all, making a change in the lineup, putting a more defensive-minded Torrey Craig in there,
yeah,
shifting Will Barton to the bench. And then after that didn't work out in the first quarter and they got torched, you know, really coming out and challenging his team and his team buying in. Now, the team, it's still up to the players to buy in, but
clearly the message got through. And what did we see at the end of that game? We saw DeMar DeRozan tossing the ball into the stands out of pure frustration after what the Nuggets had done to him and his team, to the point where he just got fined $25,000. So, you know, kudos to Michael Malone, because he's been living in Greg Popovich's shadow this entire series. I have a sense when it's all said and done, he will have escaped it completely, and people around the NBA world will be looking at Michael Malone a whole lot differently.
I've talked to a lot of guys that have been involved in the National Basketball Association when Michael Malone was an assistant coach. You know, he spent time in Cleveland with LeBron James. Guys are very high in the league on Michael Malone and the coaching that he does. And, you know, the several times that I've talked to Michael Malone over the course of the season, talked about the chemistry of his basketball team, how much guys like coming in and playing together. And I've told you that many, many times. But I love the way they respond to him. Like, he's earned their respect him enough to where, remember when Brian Shaw came out and just blistered the players, and the players, I mean, there was not that mutual respect that had been gained, and therefore you look at him like, dude, you're not in a position where you can do that yet. Michael Malone has earned the right to come out and be very honest, very critical of the way they play. And you know what? They respond to his voice, so he's doing a hell of a job coaching this basketball team.
Next on the Morning Brew.
You know, we started the rebuild last year, and we get in the playoffs, and that felt great. And to take another step this year and win round one and be moving on, I love that our guys are getting rewarded for all their hard work and their dedication and their commitment, and that's what you want to see as a coach.
Well, Jared Bednar's stock is also a soaring as the Avalanche now into the second round after dispatching of the Flames in five really easy games. How'd they do it so easily?
Hey, man, you know better than I. I mean, they have got, one, they're skating with great confidence. They are athletically, I will put them against anybody that I've watched play hockey this year. I mean, athletically, the way they skate, they're amazing. They're coming at you in waves. They skate at both ends of the ice with great athleticism. But the bottom line is they can skate like that, and they're not afraid to grind. Like a guy like your superstar, like a McKinnon, is not afraid to grind or jump in front of a puck or do whatever he has to do to turn the tide and start skating the other way. That's what's most impressive to me. The superstars are the guys that are setting the tone and grinding.
Well, and that's the thing. You get into a series right away. It has to be your best guys delivering. And the Avs top line did. They were fantastic. And then you look at, conversely, for Calgary, their top guys. Where were they? I mean, Johnny Gaudreau did not score a goal in that series. Some of their other top guys, Michael Backlund.
Tuck-a-Chuck
had two goals.
Early
Lindholm
in the first
only
game.
Had a goal. Monahan only had a goal. So it was.
I'm going to blame Tuck-a-Chuck.
There you go.
By the way, Bednar, come on now. On the bench, does any coach in hockey look better than Bednar? Like, he could just put on skates right now and go muck it up with somebody. If we're just fighting, if it comes down to you have to fight the opposing coach, we're going to win.
I don't know. He looks like he should put some dark shades on and be like the head of a Secret Service detail. I mean, the guy is.
The guy's put together now.
Next on the Morning Brew.
2-0. Tony drops his ball with authority to right center field. Quinn's got to play chase. Desi, they get a green light. Tony may be heading towards third. Here we go. But two RBIs for Walters, and the Rockies lead it 4-0.
AT&T Sportsnet there with the call. The Rockies have won six of their last seven games. Now, they still have a ways to go. They're 9-13. Mm-hmm. They're fourth in the National League West. But, Mark, is there a sense for you that they have weathered the storm?
Yes. I've watched a lot of Rockies games. I watched this whole series against Philly. From a pitching standpoint, Mike, they've been phenomenal. Their starting pitching has been deep. They've gone deep. They've eliminated runs. They have. They've just been really, really good. They produced some runs, but they haven't been lights out or torching opposing pitchers. But they have been good. They've played really good baseball down here in the last, what, they won 6 of 7?
6 out of their last 7, yeah.
3 of 4 of from the Phillies. They've got, what, the Nats coming into town tonight? Mm-hmm. I tell you what, they're starting to play a heck of a lot more confident. And the other thing they're doing, they're playing defense. If you remember the first couple series, man, they had a bunch of errors. Charlie Blackmon looked lost in left field, right field. I'm telling you that this is this team is playing good defense right now. They're getting great starting pitching. And I tell you what, they're scoring just enough runs to be dangerous.
Next on the Morning Brew.
I'd like to start out this press conference with a thank you to John Elway.
All right, so John Elway is going to speak today and give us some, hopefully some kernels of truth as to what to expect from the Broncos in the draft starting on Thursday. But should this be a case where if you're John Elway, you figure out the formula, that maybe after years of struggle, that after what happened last year, the formula should be in place, should be relatively easy to follow?
You would think, Mike, and that is find really good football players that have great football kind of understanding and character, great football care. I guess great football character kind of encompasses the knowledge of the game, the way you approach the game, the study habits, the work ethic, all those things is football character. That's what you're looking for. They figured that out last year, and they know they have a bunch of positions that they have to address. So, that makes sense to me. I think they've got that figured out.
That'll do it for the Morning Brew. Bring that to you each and every morning at 6:30. Coming up next, my first chance to react to the release of the Broncos schedule. I have a number. I have a record in mind. I'll share that with you. You may not like it. Next.
Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan presents Schlereth and Evans.
So I was off when the schedule came out. And I know it's a big deal.
Yes, you were.
To weigh in on what you think the record's going to be based on the schedule. And I know that there are the serious people in our business who are like, it's silly to go through the schedule and put W's and L's next to games. So many things can happen. So many things can change from one year to the next. And all I know is that I do this every single year, and whatever record I end up coming up with after I do my little W and L experiment, it ends up being very, very close to what actually ends up happening, okay? A game or two here and there.
Sure.
That's it.
But that's what I've always hated about it. Because, you know, you're like some prognosticator, some seer, you know, you're going to talk to the oracle, right? And you're just going to be holding that oracle and you're going to be like, give me some insight. And then the next thing you know, Mike, you know, you're like, yeah, well, I was right in the first quarter. They were 2-2, but I just got their games wrong, you know, mixed up. I just always looked at it. I've always hated going through, that's a win, that's a win, that's a win, that's a loss.
But you did it.
Oh, I've done it before plenty of times. I just kind of look at the team and the teams they're playing, especially when it comes to the quarterbacks they're playing, and then I think, okay, what's their record going to be? I don't know which games exactly they're going to win and lose, but you know, I'm just kind of like, I think they're...
Now,
like,
you and I haven't talked about this at all.
No.
So what'd you come up with?
I looked at that team and I said it's a team that looks just in that schedule, and it's just a team in a schedule that just looks like it's got 8-8 written all over it.
All right, I had 7. I have 7-9.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
So, there you go.
And the truth of the matter is, as much as I hate it, you're usually kind of right in that wheelhouse, so to speak.
Tough start to the schedule. Tough start to the season.
Okay.
You got to go to Oakland, and before you say, oh, that's a win. Wait, really? What happened last time you went to Oakland?
Mm-hmm.
Then you're home against Chicago.
Right.
At Green Bay. I mean, I think they start 0-3.
Mike.
Then they come home to play Jacksonville. I think they'll win that game.
Uh-huh.
Then they're at the L.A. Chargers.
Which, see, that to me is a home game for Denver. At L.A. Chargers, that little stadium in Carson, California.
Yeah, I think they'll split with the Chargers this year.
That's a little soccer stadium. Like, the Chargers, and I talked to Philip Rivers about this. This is toward the end of the season. He goes, it's not as bad as it was when we first started. Like, we're starting to get a few more fans filtering in, but he goes, it was straight up, we played nothing but road games because we come there and I called a game, one of their first games in that stadium against the Eagles, where it was three quarters of that stadium was filled with Eagles fans.
So I got them losing at the Chargers, beating Tennessee here, losing to Kansas City
but
here.
Wait. Tennessee has a first-round draft choice at the quarterback position, number two overall. I mean, that's what you have to have. There's no way they can win that game.
Ah, note the sarcasm. Lose to Kansas City here, lose at Indianapolis.
Showtime! Lord so, have mercy. Right now, what do you got them, like 2-7?
Two and six.
2-6?
Yeah. Beat Cleveland here.
Are you basically, you're not on the, you know, you're not bowing to the altar of the Cleveland Browns right now, like everybody else in America is?
So I'm 3-6 at the bye. Then I have them losing at Minnesota, then beating Buffalo. I know Buffalo's got one of those Hall of Fame five quarterbacks.
Right.
Beating the Chargers here, losing at Houston, losing at Kansas City, then coming back, finishing the season with wins over Detroit and Oakland, which will create rampant optimism going into 2021. But yeah, 7-9. But you got 8-8. Hope we're wrong, but I'm struggling to find 10 wins there on that schedule.
Struggling.
Yeah. I mean, it's they got like, I think,
maybe 9. Maybe, you know, a couple games go here and there. But
right, I think they have the 10th rated or the second highest rated or toughest rated schedule or something like that based on last year's opponent's wins. And I know that's subject to change, you know, a couple injuries and, you know, you go from the outhouse to the penthouse. But look at the quarterbacks. You're going to play Andrew Luck, right? You're going to play Showtime twice, Patrick Mahomes.
Showtime!
Phillip Rivers twice. Aaron Rodgers.
Deshaun Watson.
Nick Foles, who's been, you know, hotter than Wolf here in the last 2 years.
Your boy, Baker.
Dude, if Cleveland actually, if they win that division, how insufferable is Cleveland Brown fan going to be? Maybe they deserve it, though. They have been down.
They do deserve it. Yeah, they deserve it. I'm not going to.
Kind of like Patriot. It's kind of like Patriot fan when the Patriots finally, you know, the problem with Patriot fan is now they think that the league started in 2000.
Right.
At first you were like, oh, aren't they cute? They won a championship. Good for them. They deserve it. They were awful since 1960, whatever. They came in the league. 1960, maybe? They came in the league? 60?
Yeah. AFL days, yeah.
Yeah. So, and they were so bad. Like, you know, like a little pat on the head. Good for you guys.
On the RamosLaw.com text line, 303-713-1043. Evans. Here you go again. Not understanding the importance of coaching. San Antonio has maybe two, maybe three good players and a bunch of stiffs that couldn't even make the Nuggets. Malone stinks. Game 3, the second unit took a 10-point lead. He promptly took them out and never put the same unit in again. If they win this series, it'll be in spite of Malone, not because of him. Oh my God!
What about
not only some of the personnel moves he made in Game 4, but just getting the team to buy in, getting the team to believe, getting a team that has knew very well going into this series their struggles in San Antonio, and then they give away home court advantage right away. They get blown out in Game 3. It'd be very easy for this team to think they don't have a chance. And by the way, I mean, if you were following Nugget fans on Twitter after the first quarter, in which they were down 34-22, it was like, well, I guess they're just too young, or, well, I guess, you know, it's not our year. Oh, well, the Spurs just, they're too good, they're too experienced. I mean, Nugget fans were writing this team off after the first quarter, and the fact that this team, starting immediately in the second quarter, came out and changed that entire tone of that game and just flexed their muscles and said, not today. They repelled every charge that San Antonio put together to the point where the Spurs were completely frustrated at the end of the game, and the sainted Greg Popovich had no answers. I mean, come on, let's first of all, you give the team credit, because that's a bunch of guys that were doing something that is hard for young teams to figure out how to do in the NBA playoffs, and it's win on the road. But give credit to the coach as well for driving home that message and then buying it.
Do you know how hard it is to get everybody to buy in, everybody pull the same direction, get everybody? I mean, you've got to be not only a coach, but you got to be a psychologist. And I look at Mike Malone and what he's been able to do and the way he's gotten this team to play and to lay out for him. And, oh, by the way, to accept the criticism. When he gets after him, they accept it. Like, that's a hard thing to do. I think he's done a brilliant job of coaching this team. Brilliant job.
All right, coming up, you're going to clear the air.
I am indeed. And this is going to be some draft related. And I've got something that's going to be very intriguing. Hot off the presses. Listen.
Oh, that means it's hot.
Hot off the presses, people. And this is the first time I've heard this name associated with Denver Broncos. And I got to tell you, I kind of like it.
You like it. Mark Leike. He clears the air next.